Earlier this year, I discovered Outlander Podcast, a site dedicated to all things Outlander, and a way for the founders of the site, Ginger and Summer, to share their excitement with others on the upcoming Outlander Star series. 2 days ago, on July 6th, Ginger and Summer featured an interview with me as a representative of Audio Gals at Outlander Podcast. We talked about audiobooks and romance listeners' love of the Outlander series, and now Ginger and Summer are joining us today to not only talk about their love of the Outlander series, but the Star series in particular. Welcome to Audio Gals, Ginger and Summer.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Let's start at the beginning with each of you telling us something about you and your love of the Outlander series. Summer, when did you first discover Outlander?
I first discovered the Outlander series when I was living in New York City. I was out there going to school in the late 90s, and I used to ride the subway a lot, and long subway rides are boring. So I used to try to pick up really big books when I was at the grocery store. And I was in the checkout line one day, and I saw this really big book called Drums of Autumn. So I picked it up, and I said, this looks pretty good. It might be Scottish looking. I'm going to read that. Well, about halfway through the book, I realized this was not the first book in the series. And I finished it, because she does give enough information of backstories as she tells the story that you can kind of understand what's going on, but you miss so much of the little things that had in the previous books. So as soon as I finished the fourth book, I ran out and got the first three so that I could catch up and figure out what I'd missed. But I was also really confused when I went back and read Outlander for the first time, because in my mind, after reading the fourth book, Jamie was this strapping older gentleman, and they kept referring to him as young Jamie. And I was like, who is this young Jamie? And why won't he live Claire alone? And when are we going to meet Jamie? So I was very confused when I went back and read Outlander for the first time.
That was
my first experience with the books.
Well, and Ginger, what was your experience? I assume Summer may have introduced you to the series.
She did, but only after I purchased it, unbeknownst to me. If I'm not mistaken, and Summer can correct me, I don't think I had the English version.
No, you did not.
I had
the English version.
And I had
a German version.
I actually said virgin, and you guys take that out. I had no English version with me. I have done some travel and study overseas, and German is my second language. So whenever I am on a trip in a German-speaking country, I am sure to get as many German books as Summer said, big, thick books to bring back with me. And it went on my shelf for I don't know how long, probably a few years at least. But she did notice the last name, the author's name. And I think that that's what brought her to tell me about it. She said, basically, Ginger, have you heard of these books? Have you read them? And I said, no. And we come to find I had owned it for I don't know how many years in German. From that time that I found it, I was a student assistant and finishing up some college, and it was just, there was no turning back.
Yes. So what do you think drew each of you so completely to the series?
I think I've always had an affinity for men in kilts. And I know that when I was I was an exchange student when I was like 16 in Germany, and when I came home was right when Rob Roy and Braveheart came out. And in the week after I came home from being overseas, I saw both of those movies in the course of the week, and I was like, I'm done. It's all Scottish from here on out. Let's find some more Scottish things.
I also have had an affinity or a great liking of all things Celtic, of Irish, Scottish, all and sundry. And I actually was able to, after I found the books, not before, but I was actually able to spend a year studying in Scotland at the University of St. Andrews. And I had a wonderful time. You can't get much more Scottish than Scotland.
No.
And great opportunity, wonderful, unforgettable time. And so, yes, I was interested in, you know, Celtic stuff, whatever that means. And then I read the books and I became even more interested and enamored of, yes, the people, the language, the country, but also, of course, all through this magical storytelling of Diana's. And so, of course, every time a book came out, I would get it as soon as I could and I would devour it. But I took it a little far. I went to study there.
That just sounds like a wonderful opportunity to me. I too am into all things Celtic, but I've always had to study from afar. So lucky, lucky girl. Have you all listened to the books?
We have. I know I read the first four or five books just reading them. And then I started getting into the audiobooks because Ginger was raving about Davina Porter. And I was like, I gotta listen to this lady. So I actually listened to, I think the first one I listened to was Breath of Snow and Ashes. And then after that one, I was like, now I gotta go back and listen to all the rest of them. So I think I got an Audible account and started racking them up and listening to them. But since then, I will purchase both when they come out. And I'll listen to the audiobook first, and then I'll go back and read the actual book.
As we spoke about with Leah, I have loved audiobooks for a very long time. But I believe I started listening to Outlander, I would say the early, or some one of the books, or a few of the books, in the early 2000s. As Summer said, I will also purchase the ebook and the audiobook. And because I am still that traditional reader, I get the hardback as well, because that's, of course, what's available when it first comes out. Ultimately, I do want to have the trade paperbacks because I think they're beautiful. But, I mean, I don't need five copies of everything, but who knows. With the release of Moby, I had the hardback. And I purchased the ebook as soon as I could. But I actually started reading, but I only got maybe two or three paragraphs. I only got about two or three pages in, and I wanted to go straight to the audiobook. And so Moby is the first of all eight that I have only listened to. First, only listened to, and second, began with the listening. And it is a completely different experience. I think it's a great an augmentation of your experience. I have not done the whisper sync yet. I have not done the total immersion reading, but as we discussed before, you cannot get any better than having something that is so portable and taking it with you to work, to the car, to exercise, whatever. So, and to have Davina, you can't ask for anything better.
Well, let's move on then, and let's talk about these Outlander events. I know that you have mentioned to me more than once something that you have attended, a number of maybe retreats. I don't know exactly what they're called, but can you tell us about a few that you have gone to?
This is Ginger. I have been fortunate to attend a few. The very first ones I ever attended were back, I believe, in 2001 and 2002, when I purchased a copy of Fiery Cross and went to a little independent bookstore, which I cannot remember the name of, but they have events that she has gone to signings there numerous times. And then in 2009, when A Breath of Snow and Ashes came out, I bought my hardback and I drove to a little independent bookstore, so I have had those opportunities, because I was decently local enough. It was only a few hours drive, so that was doable. I've also been to a Highland Games, a Scottish Games that she was at. I know she's done, in the past especially, she would go to a lot of these and just sit up at the table with her books and sign away. I was able to do that, I think, once at the Pleasanton Games, and I think it was in 2002, but I could be mistaken. And other than those early book signings, much more recently, since the Star Series was announced, I wouldn't call it a Diana Gabaldon event. I would call it the... It was definitely a Stars event. Yeah. But Summer and I were very fortunate to attend the L.A. Outlander Invades L.A. fan event, put on by Stars, kind of co-sponsored or co-put on by DirecTV. We were very fortunate to be able to meet some of the people there, some of the writers, some of the producers, and some of the actors. So it was a lot of fun. And ironically, Diana was the one we didn't get to see because she was surrounded. It was her birthday, and you know, it was a long day for them, and they had a lot of press before. But Summer can speak to that as well.
Well, what I will say about the two events that I've been to, the recent ones we've been to, one we went to, like she said, the fan event in LA, and then there was the book signing here in town, is that with both events, I think that the event planners severely misjudged how popular she is and her series is, because they had to change venues for both events. The one in LA was going to be at a hotel. The Ebel Hotel, whatever, in Los Angeles. And then at the last, not the last minute, but pretty shortly after people started signing up to go, they switched the venue to an actual theater.
The Orpheum.
To the Orpheum Theater, which is much larger and held like probably 3 or 4 times the people. With the one here in town, they were going to do it at the library full.
Yeah.
Beautiful facility. But it just couldn't handle the 975 tickets they eventually sold.
And I somewhat recently also was, again, fortunate enough to get a ticket, purchase a ticket, don't get me wrong, to the Outlander fan retreat put on by Random House. And that was in Seattle. And I was able to... of course, you go there, it includes the entire day, the book, a signed book that she can personalize, and you wait in line. It was very organized. It was such a wonderful event. There was a rep from Stars there. There were reps from Random House there. And it was, of course, and I was there. It was a very magical day. And this was great because, yes, I'm sure, of course, it included this fan, the momentum of the series and the excitement surrounding the Star series, but it was focused on her, and I loved that there was a day that was just about her and Moby.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Does Diana speak at these events?
She has. I wasn't at the Seattle event, but at the two events that I went to, she did speak, and they were both kind of like moderated chats where they had... the first one in LA, it was Alicia Quarles. She's with E! News. She kind of got up there. And at that event, it was Diana, Ron Moore, the producer, Sam Heughan, who plays Jamie, and then Katrina Balfe, who plays Claire. It was all of them were there. So that was a moderated chat with them. And then it was just one representative from the library. And she basically had like a one-on-one moderated chat back and forth, kind of like an interview on stage in front of us, and that was probably went on for a good hour at least.
Oh, wow.
And at the Seattle event, there were a few speakers, and of course there was some Scottish Highland dancing or country dancing. There was a comedy troupe and little activities for people to do during the some of the not breakout sessions, but time. I guess the timed or the planned breaks. But yes, she had a keynote where she took a few questions toward the end, but she was able to just speak.
Oh, nice.
And I will say that you'll have to tell me if it was true about the Seattle event as well, but there has been a piper at every event.
I mean, I guess that's all we've done in the past 6 months, but there... And yeah, it seems to be... I think I've seen some pictures of some other events that are on her book tour, and... I think I've seen at least in one or two other places there have been bagpipers as well.
Oh, nice.
It's
like the first thing they bring out, and it really sets the mood for the whole evening.
I don't know about you, but it gets me in the gut, and it's like, really? I didn't need an extra thing to punch me in the gut. I'm about to see this queen of talent and writing goddess. I don't need this thematic music to make me even any more teary-eyed.
Well, now, how do you discover these Outlander retreats and events? I know our listeners are going to be wondering that.
That's a very good question. The only thing I can say is we're a little bit obsessed.
Oh.
I mean, so basically, be obsessed and you'll see them.
Well, when you start a podcast, that literally the only thing you talk about is Outlander, Diana Gabaldon, Scotland, and the Star series that they're creating based on the Outlander series.
It's kind of your job to know.
It's your job to know, hopefully.
That and the way that we have found out about most things, even though Outlander Stars is active, I would say kind of active, pretty active, on Facebook. They are, I believe, the number one place that they're on is Twitter, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
It's the quickest, I don't know about easiest, I cannot speak for them, but it's the quickest way to reach people. But Twitter is so immediate that as soon as they post something, even though they only have however many thousands of followers, everyone and their uncle is retweeting everything. And so it's magnified. We're very, very social media aware and talented and capable author and busy author who is also very technologically inclined. She is already very active on Twitter. So to me, that it makes even more sense because it's just more of a, I think that's the more of a community, if you will.
What's fun about Twitter is that if you follow all the right people, they talk to each other. Then you feel like you're eavesdropping on conversations. Because I know that Diana and the lead actor, Sam Heughan, they tweet back and forth all the time. And every time they do, I'm like, ooh, I get to read what they're talking about.
Oh, nice.
But I turn all my notifications on. So I have notifications on with Twitter. So you can select who you want to follow. And then the ones you follow, you can turn notifications on for just those people. So I'll get like pop-ups on my phone that's like, this is from Stars. Stars is tweeting. Diana's tweeting. So I try to stay on top of the important ones. So, I mean, I follow a bunch of people, but I probably only get notifications for a handful.
And I have way too many. I do most of the tweeting, and so I have that on my phone. And I'm sure I have way too many notifications turned on. But I will say that for the most part, not 100%, I typically don't miss big things. The easiest way is, I think, through social media. Get yourself a free Twitter account and follow Stars. And of course, follow Outlander Pod. But also, quite frankly, I mean, this is not really a secret. It's there for anyone to see. If you look at the people, pretty much all of them, that Outlander Stars follows, they do follow a lot of fan sites and blogs, don't get me wrong. But the good thing about that is you're going to get not only the tweets or notifications potentially of the tweets of people who are involved with production, you're also going to get tweets of people who are closely following it, such as Outlander Pod, who either make a podcast or write a blog post or, you know, have something on their Facebook that goes through and posts to Twitter. But the blogs and the fan sites are pretty much, there's something's going on every day. So that's really the best thing I could recommend. Diana Gabaldon's own webpage also lists her appearances. So that's another one to check out.
I start each day with social media. That's the first hour of my day is getting on Twitter and Facebook and spreading the word of Audio Gals or speaking of audiobooks. And Twitter by far is the best instrument for that. I know how to use Twitter now, and it is by far the most informative. But one of our reviewers, who's a big Outlander fan, Victoria, she hooked me up with a Facebook group. So I'm going to ask you next about how people can find these groups of fans that they can tie into, and if not hear news of events, just talk about the books and how much they love them and what's going on. She hooked me up with on Facebook, I think it's Ladies of Lollybrook. And that is a fun group to just watch. I'm really not in any other groups, but how would one find these types of groups?
The best way, and Summer can add to this or correct me if I'm wrong, is that one of the best ways now to find a group to discuss things with would be on Outlander Stars Facebook page, they have something called the fan directory or the community directory. So three things. There's a drop down for important Twitter accounts, a drop down for many Facebook groups, and a drop down for many websites that are either fan pages or Tumblr accounts, etc. And the interesting thing is the Facebook groups that are on this list are general Outlander fan groups or fan pages or fan groups. However, if you go on to Facebook in Outlander and your state, or even if it's a big area, especially Outlander plus your metropolitan area, you will likely get a local group, or at least a state group if you have maybe a not so highly populated state. And so I don't believe at this time Stars has listed those, because if you think about it, those could be endless. But they don't, I don't think, as a rule, I don't think they list a lot of regional groups, but they have listed many, many fan groups. And that's probably the easiest way is to just look at what they've listed on their own site. But there's also a site called Outlander Hub, I believe. And this, I think before Outlander Stars created their own little directory, this started, I believe its intent was to try and list everything. So there are quite a few ways to search for this stuff.
Excellent, excellent information. I would have never guessed. I think I could have figured out the Twitter part, but that was about it. So I know the announcement of the Stars TV series inspired you to start Outlander Podcast. When was the series announced, and did you launch your site shortly after that?
When the Stars series was announced, of course, people were, you know, happy, excited, maybe a little bit scared, and not knowing who was going to be involved and all of this stuff. Well, we knew pretty much right away it was Ron D. Moore, because that was actually what made this so exciting, because we knew it was going to be not just legit, but also in potentially awesome hands. I didn't want to do a blog, and there's nothing wrong with the blog, but I know I like to talk.
Good God.
Someone knows I like to talk, so God bless her for joining me. But I like to talk, but we also like to talk about the books. And I thought, let me check. And I did. I looked real quick just through, and I Googled stuff and just wanted to make sure there was nothing called the Outlander Podcast. And I thought, we have to do this. And so, oh, I wonder what they're going to do. You know, sometimes it's going to take a year for them to even start. What's going on? And then, bam, Jamie was leaked, and then it was official. And then, little by little, more people were announced in casting. And we were following this with such excitement and such nervousness that we didn't really have our own outlet. Our outlet was talking to each other. And sometime, I think in mid to late July, I got the idea. I just started rolling from there, but we didn't actually do our first episode until August. I think mid to late August.
A little known fact about Ginger is that
it'd be nice.
This is nice-ish. Is that she I call her a hijacker. Because she'll come in, she'll wait till I'm doing something, and then she'll come in the room and hijack me. And doesn't matter what I was doing before, I've now commanded all of my attention, and I can't pay attention to anything else. And I think
until I get done,
right? And so pretty much, I have to stop what I'm doing, pause the television, stop this, whatever it is, until she gets out, which she's gonna get out because there's no turning her away once she starts. And this was one of those times, but I'm glad I listened because we've been having a really good time.
Oh, it's been a trip and a half. It's been amazing. It's been amazing.
But I would like to say that they did announce the series in May.
Oh.
And then they announced Jamie. Jamie was announced like a month later, like in June.
No, Jamie was definitely announced in July. For a fact.
Well,
but the show may have been attached to Ron Moore or something in June, yeah. But something did happen in June. Okay.
And then you decided to start in July, and you actually had your first podcast in August. So tell our listeners, what is Outlander Podcast? What do you all do from week to week?
I'm sorry, it's not funny. Well, there's no rules. That's not true.
When we started the Outlander Podcast, it was a lot more fluid. Like, we were like, oh, well, we'll just see what's going on. And at that point in time, there was a lot of new stuff coming out from Starz. Mm. There was a lot of, all the actors were being cast. There was a bunch of news every week. So we had a lot of stuff to talk about. And of course, in the early days when we first started, it was a lot of, you know, here's who we are. Here's why we love the books. You know, here's a little bit about the series, blah, 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 blah. And then we found after a few weeks when the news started becoming less and less and we were running out of personal stories, we were like, what are we going to talk about now? We have to do this. We've agreed to do this on a weekly basis. Now, no one's telling us we have to do it weekly, but we started it and we were like, no, we're doing a weekly podcast. We're doing it. It's going to be done. And so we were like, what can we possibly do to fill time? Because we got to put something out there. And then,
as I like to say, we were, and I'm sure we're actually not the first, but I would say it anyway, we're the first podcast about a show that doesn't exist yet.
Right.
But I'm sure that's not true.
So, and I don't even remember which one of us got the idea, but I was like, hey, let's do a read-along. And not reading the book on the podcast.
We are not Davina, no. So there's no way. Plus copyright issues.
Which we get a lot of people asking about that when we say we do a read-along, and they're like, oh, you read the book on your podcast? And we're like, oh, no. We leave that to the professionals. We actually, it's more like a book club where we go, we'll read it separately and then come together and take notes and talk about it. We're literally one chapter away from the end of Outlander right now on our read-along, which is actually good because we've timed it. I don't even think, we didn't even do it on purpose, I don't think. We tried to in the beginning before we had a premiere date to time it so that we would end our read-along right before the series started so then we could basically turn and change our doing read-alongs to recaps, show recaps, which we still intend to do. But then they moved our premiere date because we thought...
Well, we never had one
no,
to move.
But they did say summer. And so we were thinking maybe June, maybe July, and then they pushed it all the way out to August. So we were like, oh my God, where are we going to come up with more to fill in this time? And we've been really lucky with coming upon interesting people to interview and being able to fill time with other things. And with a couple of interviews that we have in the can that we're getting ready to edit and put out there, I think we have just enough content to literally take us to the week before the show premieres. And then our first week with new content is going to be just after the premiere date of the first episode. So it did actually work out. I don't know why, and I don't know how. It just did.
Can you share your thoughts on seeing a beloved series in print and audio formats making the jump to the TV series?
I will say that I was very concerned at first. Once I found out that Ron Moore was attached to it, I got less concerned. I'm sure most of the people who are familiar with Outlander know that over the years it's been optioned many times to be a major motion picture, but she's never approved any of the scripts because they're trying to butcher this like beautiful
book
into a 2-hour movie, which you just can't do. You would have to cut all of the beauty and everything that makes Outlander out of it to make it fit. It would just be like I mean, could you imagine somebody reading a Cliff Notes version of that book and being satisfied?
Oh, exactly.
You just couldn't, and that's what they'd have to do. So it was always whenever they would mention, oh, it's been optioned, it was always with trepidation that I'd take that news. But then they came across and said that it's been optioned for a series. And I was like, ooh, this is interesting, a series. That means that they'll do multiple episodes. And then we found out that it was going to be Starz that had taken it on. And then we got more excited because we had just finished watching Spartacus on Starz, which was this epic Roman series, which was incredibly graphic in several ways. And I thought, this is good because had a regular cable channel picked it up or network television, they would have had to edit it out and like water it down for the broadcasting. So I was like, I really want, if they're going to do it, they got to do it justice. So when we found out Starz had it, we were like, okay, they're gritty enough to do what needs to be done to bring this story to the screen for us. And then we found out Ron Moore was attached to it. And we were like, ugh, he did so many amazing things for Battlestar Galactica. I mean, then we found out they were giving us 16 episodes, which was a great thing. Because even Game of Thrones, they only get 10 episodes for those books. And those Game of Thrones books are pretty lengthy as well. And I think that 16 episodes, hour-long episodes, I think they've got just enough time to do this thing some real justice.
I know, I was very concerned anytime I heard Outlander and movie in the same sentence. I just thought, I will not go see that. I have no interest because there's no way justice can be done. And I myself am very excited about this series. I didn't realize the 16 episodes until you all told me about that, and I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. And I just see nothing but great possibilities for this, especially now that I'm following it more closely, and you all have inspired that. So
good.
You're making
inspired
more
your obsession.
When I looked at the Starz Outlander page today, I saw it referred to as season one. Mm-hmm. So first of all, I assume season one is just the first book in the series, just Outlander.
Yes,
you're taking,
yes.
Is that correct? Now, but I have to say, I was pretty excited when I saw that season one, because that to me meant there was definitely a season two. Do you know anything about that?
They have not announced anything about a season two yet. However, I will say that with other series on the Starz Network, they have announced successive seasons very shortly into the airing of the episode. So fingers crossed, we will find out very shortly when it starts airing that they've picked it up for a second season. But honestly, I don't see how they couldn't pick it up for a second season. If just the people who've been reading these books faithfully for the last 20-something years subscribe to Starz and tune in, that's enough people, I promise you. But they're going to get more than that, because they're going to get a whole new group of people into these books and into this series and into this author just by having it as a TV show, because it's going to be bringing it to people who maybe don't have the patience to sit down and read a lengthy historical novel. So you're going to be reaching a brand new audience here.
What about the actors? Let's start with Jamie. What do you know about Sam Heughan? He's new to me. And what do you think of him?
Well, he was new to, I think, most fans, most people. And he is a Scottish actor who trained at the, I think it now is called the Royal Conservatory, but it was the Royal Academy of Drama and Music, if I'm not mistaken, or Music and Drama in Glasgow. And so he is a trained actor. And he's been, once we started looking into his vita, I guess you could say, we saw that he had been in a popular film, A Princess for Christmas.
A Hallmark movie.
And
it's cute.
Just very sweet. But, you know, just nothing that I would definitely never have recognized him.
But I think that's important.
Yes.
That they got a no-name, somebody who hasn't been seen in other things, because then you have no preconceived notion of him. He can be whoever they need him to be because you don't already know him as something else. So I think it was really important that they get some possibly unrecognizable actors in to play these big meaty parts.
And although, of course, they haven't invited us to sit down and watch kind of episodes or anything.
No, but they should.
So we haven't seen him perform as Jamie outside of anything anyone else has, like the trailers and the bits that have been shown, or in, of course, in still shots. But just from the reaction of people, of media, the reaction of Diana herself, different things that people have said, we know he's a great actor. Of course, you can be a great actor and not maybe sell a role well to people who have certain expectations or come with those preconceived ideas about, not about him, but about Jamie. And so that's a lot to live up to. So I agree. I think it was good that he was somewhat of an unknown as far as Hollywood. That was important. And I think everything I've heard and seen, he embodies it.
He also smells really good.
Oh, yeah.
And how do you know that?
Well, we happened to get some meet and greet tickets at the LA event that they were at.
Ah.
So we got to go backstage and basically pose for pictures with the two lead actors and Ron Moore.
Nice.
And stuff. So I have some treasured photos.
Well, and I think there has to be a challenge in finding a man who can be referred to as red-haired, and be as sexy as this guy is.
Seriously. You know what? I think a lot of this can be attributed to some great hairstylists taking the time to get the right shade of red. And also, whoever his personal trainers are so spot on with his training sessions, because they have made him look, because he was really skinny. If you look at pictures of him,
it was live.
He was like very, like more wiry, just very much
more,
smaller,
more runner,
compact.
More runner and yoga person,
right?
Than a bulk.
But if you look at him now, he's bulked up a lot, but his muscles don't look like bodybuilder
muscles. He's not.
He looks like somebody who's been out there in the field swinging a sword, moving hay. He looks like he's been doing physical labor for his living, and it looks good.
It does. From what I've seen, it definitely does. And Claire, Katrina Bell, she is another new name to me. But I will say the first time I saw her, my first look told me she was Claire. She was just perfect for it. She was that image that had dwelled in my mind for years as I had experienced this.
Very, very much so. One thing that that I think both of us would say is that even though, again, by Hollywood standards, she was pretty much an unknown. She had been in a few movies. She was in one, I think, with Sylvester Stallone. I haven't seen it. But
she was in Super 8. Steven Spielberg movie. And then she was also in, I think, Catch Me If You Can. Is it Catch Me If You Can? No, I can't remember. And Now You See Me or something like that. She's been in a couple of movies that have been out fairly recently.
But she was a model. She was actually scouted as a model. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, put off going to acting school. And then I think she returned and finished. But she was a model, and she was a Victoria's Secret model. I mean, she was a supermodel, basically. And she just, maybe if you were in the fashion industry, you probably knew who she was. I definitely am not in that industry, and I don't follow it that much, so I never had heard of her. But again, you have someone with tremendous acting chops who is relatively unknown compared to, say, you know, Meryl Streep. And I am the same as Leah in that when I first saw the picture that scrolled onto my Twitter screen, on my phone, on Twitter, I felt like I had been punched. I felt I lost my breath.
But in a good way, right?
In a good way.
Sounds very violent.
Well, punching is never good, but I felt I had lost my breath. It was like, just like Leah said, it was like someone had taken this image that I didn't even know I had. It had kind of nebulous forms, but more body type than face composition in my mind while reading or listening to these stories. But when I saw Katrina's, and I know they did her hair and her makeup and everything, but holy monkey, that was amazing. I couldn't believe it. I said, oh my gosh, that's her. That's her. I have nothing else to say. I don't care what she sounds like. That's her.
Then there's Black Jack Randall, or Frank Randall, played by Tobias Menzies. I must admit that I thought him a perfect choice for such a dark character as Black Jack. But then, of course, I've seen him in HBO's Rome and Game of Thrones.
Let me just moment here.
She's just obsessed.
Not
with
obsessed.
Tobias.
Not obsessed. It's concentrated love. Oh. That's my word for it. We don't have obsessions. Well, we do, but it's concentrated love. But I've always appreciated Tobias Menzies, but when I saw that he was cast as Frank/Blackjack Randall, I thought, oh my goodness, what a choice. And whereas Claire was, oh, that is her, with Tobias it was, oh, I can totally see that. That's a great choice. So he definitely embodies it once you see the trailer and the stills of him in character and him in costume. But one thing I was able to immediately click with, I guess you could say, is yes, I had also seen Rome, and I had also seen him in Game of Thrones, and this man's acting chops are ridiculous, and he is so talented that he would definitely be someone who not only looked the part and embodied the part, but be able to take you through that journey, the two journeys of Frank, which of course they have to focus a little bit more on him since this is a visual medium. They have to make you believe that she really had this love for her husband rather than just have him a little bit in the first, you know, two chapters. So there's a lot more Frank in the series, we believe, than was necessarily in the books. But he definitely can do that, and then also take you to the other extreme of this brutal sadist.
In fact, it's some of the parts with Black Jack that I shrink from violence. And there were times in the Outlander book, well, in several of them, I've just had to like, okay, I need to place this on fast speed. I don't really want to hear this too much. But he's got some pretty brutal scenes there that I can see him doing those. But boy, not that I'll be paying a lot of attention to those scenes. But, oh.
You know, what's funny is that character, when you go back and actually reread Outlander for like the eighth or ninth time, however many times you've read it, I know that I've read it at least that many, but I keep forgetting because he's such a big, larger-than-life character and he does such awful things, how small his part is in the actual book. Like, he only is in three or four scenes in the entire book.
Like, you're kidding me.
You're awful.
Really?
I'm not kidding. Like, you only see him, like, in the very beginning, like, when she goes through the stones, when she hits him in the stones, and then they
when,
run into
when she hits him in the stones?
Well, you know. Well, that's funny.
That's a good blooper for you.
When she comes through the stones, she runs into him.
There you go.
And then they see him at Fort William when Dougal takes her there to confirm that she's not a spy.
Yeah.
And then I don't think that we see him again until...
Yes. Well, and she runs away and is captured and taken to him at Fort William.
Yes.
That's number three, I think.
Right.
And then I think not till the end at
Wentworth.
Not till
the prison.
That's Wentworth. Now, that's a big scene, obviously,
yeah.
But they aren't small scenes, but it's... Yeah, it's not...
But it's not like... I mean, Dougal's in more scenes than she is.
That's true.
And Colin's in more scenes than he is, but they do such... I mean, they don't do things that aren't important, but... They don't do the things that Jack Randall does. I mean, he's awful, and those awful things stick with you. So he's this big, huge character that really is only in, like, maybe four scenes in the entire book.
Well, that just shows how much his character propels the book forward.
Absolutely.
That very much surprises me, what you said, because I would have said at least 10 scenes. So very interesting. What can listeners find at Outlander Podcast as the TV series progresses through those 16 episodes?
Well, we want to know that too. We have a general idea. As I said, when we started, we thought, the idea was to do a podcast about the show, and we don't know yet because we have to truly see what it's like. See how long it takes us.
And the short answer is that previously, what we do now, basically, our format is announcements. We start the show with announcements of anything new with the show or the series or the author. And then we go to our read-along or our interview, whichever of the two we have. And going into once the series starts, we would still have announcements. But instead of going into any of those other things, is to go into basically recap mode, where we, instead of talking about the book, we'll talk about the series. And the episode in particular that had happened the night before. That's another thing. We're grateful to Stars for helping us stick to our recording schedule. Because we release our podcasts on Sunday. And because they'll be airing on Saturdays, we can still do that and remain timely.
How involved has Diana been with Stars series, from what you know?
From what I understand, she is a consultant on the series. I know she's not writing the screenplays for them. She's like, I'm going to leave that to the people who actually know how to write screenplays, and I'll stick to what I do, which is write novels. So she's been kind of giving them their head to do that, and basically they'll come back if they have questions, and from what I understand, they keep the books in their writer's room, like the Bible,
to
go back to, which is important because it's all right there. They really don't need to do anything else but go back to that. She has provided them more than enough to fill an entire season of a show.
Well, once you release a podcast, I know you do it through your site. Can others come in then and comment in an area on what you have discussed?
Absolutely.
Yes, and we are actually very fortunate, and it's kind of neat, how that can be done, especially given this being a very literally vocal and audio medium, as I know you guys can appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
We have our blog, our site, which is where basically a WordPress a WordPress blog that we post, basically embed the link to our host where they can, you can listen, literally listen through Facebook, listen through Twitter, listen through our blog, but our host is where everything is hosted and kept and saved. But the cool thing is you can obviously tweet us, you can obviously email us, you can obviously post a comment on Facebook, and you can post a comment on the blog. But I think the neatest function that we truly haven't been, we haven't pushed it enough, but the neatest feature that I think we have, and we're so lucky to have a wonderful host in Audioboo, is that you can literally, just like any other place, type a comment, like a post if you like it, but you can also do something called record a boo. So boo, short for audio boo. You can literally listen to something and then pull out your microphone if you're at your computer, or use your app, because they have an iPhone and an Android app called Audio Boo, and you can literally record for with a free account, record up to 30 seconds and have it submitted. And so if you go to our page, and we've had a few boos recorded, and the cool thing is people can use it. We've used it for contests. We use it for if someone wants to submit a question or whatever, they can do it, and it's submitted to us privately. But I believe you can also have it submitted as a comment on your podcast or whatever audio file you've uploaded.
They do. They allow us to moderate it. And if we moderate it, we can make it public. And what's neat about it is that if they do leave us an audio comment through Audioboo, is that we can then pull that information and actually post it in one of our, in any of our future podcasts.
That's what we love, is because people can literally be part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. All right. Well, that's all new to me. That's fascinating. One of our reviewers told me she is holding a watch party. And if I lived closer to her, I would invite myself. Are you all, it sounds to me like you all are going to be home watching this by yourselves or with your family, anxious to absorb all those little details, or on opening night, are you planning on being with a group and partying?
We talked initially about maybe doing some sort of a watch party, but then I realized that this is such a special thing that I really don't want it ruined by anyone else talking and or making comments or drinking sodas loudly or spilling popcorn or any number of things that can happen at a party. And what I really want to do is really focus on the work that's been done on the show. And I can't even do that with just Ginger present, because I love her, but she is a talker. And even though she's familiar with the story and she's familiar with everything else, I can just see it now with her starting to talk in the middle of it, or like trying to commiserate with me. And all I really want her is to just shh, be quiet. Let me watch the show. So like, the agreement is that the first time we watch it, I want to be by myself, quiet in a dark room with no distractions. That way I can also get all the content that I need if I need to make notes or pick up things that I want to talk about in the next podcast.
And it actually, and we both agreed, and yes, she has her reasons and my own reasons, I'm sure may not be the same, but I mean all the same, but some of the same, in that I want to watch it alone because I know myself. I kind of joked, only half joked, on Twitter today. I said, I think I have something called, quote, the gift of tears. Literally something, like, it's like tears, not sobbing, but tears, moist eyes, are just below the surface of anything. You, whether it's a funny joke or something, you know, really, really happy, or of course really sad, I'm very, I don't think I'm over emotional, but I'm very easily touched. I'm very easily moved. And so you can take it to the next level. Me and this show, it's been literally a part of, the stories have been a part of your lives as well, and part of my life for almost 15 years, and it's, I've kind of grown up with them, and it's so, I don't even have the words to say it. It's going to be, even if nothing happens, nothing happy, nothing sad, just seeing them talk on screen, it's going to be so emotional for me. I don't want anyone else there. First of all, yeah, kind of to, you know, not ruin my experience. But also, I may at some point cry so hard, I'll have ugly cry face.
She will.
I don't want, she absolutely will. Anyway, so will you. But I don't want anyone, it's my own time to be, I don't have to be embarrassed. I want to enjoy myself and cry. And I kind of joke, it'll be in my office, lights off, fake battery lit candles, and Outlander and whiskey and the cat. But alone. And so, but the thing is, our agreement is kind of the first time, and then more if you need it, the first time alone for the experience and for everything to just wash over you and to have no stress and just enjoy it for enjoyment's sake. And then we can either watch it together or alone. And then the second time, however we watch it, is the time, at least for me, that I'll be taking notes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that I'd like the idea of a watch party, but I would have to have it recording at home.
Yes.
So that I could go back, and this is something that I will watch with my husband, and fortunately he is very used to me backing it up so I can watch something again or hear it a second time. Bless his heart, he really puts up with that, but I still want to experience these also by myself.
Well, because you know, if you're not hosting the party, whoever's hosting it always invites that one person.
Yes.
Always that one person who ruins it for everybody.
That's right.
But on the other hand, I hear all these things about local groups and people on Twitter and Facebook talking about their premiere parties. And a good part of me, really wants to go and celebrate this because it is to be celebrated, especially the premiere.
All right. If this series continues to season 2... do you all plan to continue with Outlander Podcast?
Absolutely not. She just slapped me.
Oh, you stop.
Well, I kind of joked, again, only half joking on Twitter, I don't know, a few weeks ago. It was something like, we are armed, ready, and willing to continue with the podcast for as many seasons as we're fortunate to have.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining us today. This is a very special week for us because, as you know, many audiobook fans absolutely love the Outlander series. And we're getting so excited about this. And I really think that what you have talked about today and what they will see this week at Audio Gals will be the first exposure for many, many, a large percentage of those Outlander fans. So thank you for giving us details. I hope that you will come back and visit us again, because I think it's a series that we'll continue to be very enthused about.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And mi casa es su casa. We would love to keep this conversation and relationship going. Absolutely.
Well, we will definitely participate in that. Thank you again, ladies, for joining us.
Thank you so much.